From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I was at the local garden center the other day when a truck full of tropical plants was being unloaded. And in the heat of a summer day, they looked like just the right choice to bring home to liven up the place. But which ones among the many choices could become what today's guest calls best friends and carry over year to year without too much fuss? More from the author of the new book, Tropical Plants and How to Love Them, in a moment. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant color blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Marianne Wilburn, author of the new book, Tropical Plants and How to Love Them, is a regular contributor to Better Homes and Gardens magazine and also to the popular multi-author garden website, gardenrant.com. She gardens in Northern Virginia, and yes, a lot of the non-hardy things we call tropicals are among her faithful garden companions. Hi, Marianne. I'm so glad you could join me today.
Hi, Margaret. Thank you so much for having me.
Before I go and run amok in the garden center, I need a help.
Yes, there's a lot out there right now, surprisingly, because we're starting to get into the heat of summer. So
yeah.
this is a great time to figure out what can you buy? What is going to work if I spend that money?
So I should say we'll have a book giveaway of tropical plants and how to love them with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. And congratulations on the book. The subhead is wonderful. It says building a relationship with heat-loving plants when you don't live in the tropics. So it kind of made me smile that you titled each chapter, each group of plants that are arranged in chapters, sort of with descriptors of the kind of relationship, define the kind of relationship we can have, like from summer romance plants to high maintenance partners and so forth. So maybe just tell us a little bit about how you think of all these, quote, tropicals, some of which aren't tropical at all exactly, but tender.
Yes, tender or subtropical. I had been lecturing on the tropical plants that I was growing in my garden because a lot of my local area garden groups don't use tropicals or subtropicals. And I found that sort of putting them into these categories made them so much more accessible to people. So because people are so worried about killing plants and they feel like, you know, it's beholden on them to keep these plants alive. And if they took on a tropical plant, it's obviously going to die unless they go to extreme measures. And so I thought, well, you know, just splash out and have a summer romance, or, you know, realize that when you're going to get really, really into a specific plant, you don't have to treat it all the same way. You can one year, you can overwinter it and the next year not. Or this year you can have just a whole bunch of summer romances. And so I came up with this idea of categorizing them into relationships, and it seemed to resonate with people. And so from there, I thought there's a book in that.
So there I was in the garden center, Marianne, watching them unload all these gorgeous things, but which to choose, you know, the usual plant shopping dilemma. And what sort of filter would you look through, or would you advise me and listeners to sort of look through right now? Because we're already halfway through the sort of outdoor garden season, even where you live, and especially farther north and so forth. What would be a good filter for like shopping through?
Well, I think that if you're not just going to go all out and just fall in love with just a gorgeous mandevilla or something like that and say, hey, it's okay, I'm just going to have it for the season, then maybe think about the plants that can go dormant very, very easily, and you're just going to keep them above freezing. And I'd say a lot of us have that ability to put them into a crawl space or a basement or a garage or somewhere that it's just going to keep them above freezing. You don't need to worry about light. That's always an issue for people. I don't want to set up lights. You hardly need to think about water. You're just thinking about keeping them from being desiccated. And that means maybe checking on them every 4 to 6 weeks. This last winter, it was every 6 weeks for me. So the plants that can go dormant like that, those would be the easiest to get into if you're feeling that you need to keep them alive into next year. And those are things like cannas, some beautiful cannas out there right now. Things like dahlias. People don't think of dahlias as a tropical or subtropical plant, but they are. Brugmansia, angel's trumpets, that still has its peak season in front of us. And colocasia, elephant ears, those go dormant. They die all the way back to that main organ, that storage organ, whether it's a bulb or a corm or a rhizome, and they can just sit there in that frost-free location and do really well. And I have different ways of approaching them to make your chances for survival better. But some are super easy, like canna. I know you grow canna, Margaret.
Yeah.
How precious are you with them? Because I'm not very precious with them.
Basically, I throw them down the basement stairs through the, there's a lot of them and they get to be big, huge clumps. I grow the one that some people call grande or the banana canna or musifolia. It's a big, big guy. And, you know, the clumps get gigantic. And so I basically shake off the soil and maybe I let them sit out for a little while, cure a little bit, and then just put them in tubs or, you know, bins like shipping crates with a little ventilation. I've sometimes put them in open plastic bags in the cellar. I'm not careful with them. Now, you mentioned dahlias. Those I would give more TLC to than I would to rock solid cannas, for instance. I'd rate those a little harder to store. Not hard, but a little harder. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And gingers too. It's the same sort of rhizotomous structure, but they need a little, you got to be a little bit more careful with them that they don't rot. But the cannas, yeah, mine go in a garbage bag. I'm going to have them right here on the radio to everyone. they go into a garbage bag, and I have had them this year because I have bags and bags of them. This year, one of the bags of one cultivar called Red Stripe, I completely forgot about. And I came across it while I was cleaning out the garage, and it had poked through the garbage bag, which doesn't say a lot for the garbage bag. And the leaves were coming up through. I had to cut that away. I put them into the garden. They're doing beautifully. It's hard to hurt them. So that's a really good place to start. And I know that in the garden centers, the cannas can look a little ragged and that can put people off. But it's mostly because they're usually outgrowing their pots. They're usually been underwatered for a little black plastic pot. And so they're going to consequently look a little ragged, but you get those into some good soil, you get some water on them, you get some fertilizer on them, and oh my goodness, what they can do in a garden.
So you mentioned gingers, and that they're a little, you're a little more careful, a little more TLC with those when you're storing them. Now, ginger doesn't mean the hardy gingers like we have in United States, like Sarum canadense or Sarum europaeum, the perennial European ginger. You're talking about more true gingers and turmeric and things like that. Is that what we mean? What do we mean about gingers?
That's correct. The common name for the Sarum is ginger, but what I'm talking about are the hedychiums. The turmerics, the official ginger, because I actually grow Zingiber, the ginger that you get in the grocery store, and I grow that in order to grow young ginger, which can be sliced and pickled for sushi, because that's one of my favorite things to make. Oh, so those are the gingers that I'm talking about. There's many, many, many different types of ginger, and you may not see them all. You won't see them all at the garden center. You're going to see turmerics. I'm seeing a lot of turmerics now at the garden center. Even the zeodaria, which has the beautiful red line down the center of the leaf. A lot of the hedychiums. I'm trying to think if there's a common name for hedychium beyond ginger. Sometimes they're hardy in zone 7, zone 8. But really zone 8, you'd have to do zone 7 with a lot of shelter and a lot of warm walls, I think.
Okay. Now, I think if I remember correctly, those sometimes they don't wake up as fast as that canna you just described that was poking through the bag on its own. It was so energetic. Are they a little slow sometimes to reawaken?
They sure are. You can't treat them exactly the same way as you would canna. I like to get those going a little bit earlier. If I'm growing just store-bought ginger, I'll put that out on the countertop and let it start to. I'm picking one in the store that has some nodes on it that are going to sprout because they're usually treated. And I'll put that out on the countertop and let it start to really sprout. And that'll be in sort of February time, pretty early. And then once it's starting to show some growth, I will bring it back down, put it into soil, and give it a very light amount of water, but keeping it really warm. They need that heat. And that's true for the hedychium. It's true for the turmeric. And they will rot very easily. So it's good to get them going with just a little hint of water. And then once they're starting to go, oh, okay, it's spring. It's time to start this game. Then to go ahead and give them the water that they need and be aware of that.
Okay. So in the book, you talk about the quote elephant ears, and that's a couple of different genera of plants as well, or a few. And you point out something that the gingers remind me, the way you just described the gingers remind me of, that sort of hesitation to wake up on command. some of the elephant ears is the alocasias and the colocasias. Some of them are, again, like those kind of rock hard tough guys, and some of them are a little fussier, and if they do go to sleep, you know, maybe you try to make them limp along as a house plant, but you don't want to water them too much in the winter, but a little bit. And then sometimes they sulk, they go to sleep. And sometimes, like I have one big, big old pot right now that still hasn't awakened, and it's July. And I know what it's going to do. It's going to wake up when it's good and ready.
That has got to be an alocasia.
It is an alocasia. Yes. Exactly. So tell us.
Yes, those are the reticent best friends, the alocasia. They would rather not go dormant if they had their druthers. That's not their natural state. And so if you do put them to sleep, it's going to take them a little bit longer to get going. And again, that heat is going to help a lot. A cold spring sitting out there is not going to, cold soil temperatures are not going to encourage that. So heat, warmth, a good amount of water, and if you want to, keeping it as a house plant. An alocasia actually makes a pretty decent house plant. It has a thicker, sturdier stem, a sturdier leaf, much more structure. So yeah, it's for playing around with. You play around with what's working for you. Are you using that? You're letting that go dormant, but do you ever use it as a houseplant?
I try. And what happens is at a certain point in the winter, it decides it wants to go to sleep. And I think it's you know, I mean, there's multiple factors, obviously, with overwintering something in an awakened state, you know, your light, your temperature, your humidity, and then your watering, how much you're watering and so forth. And so apparently I displease it on one or several of those factors at some point. And some years it just decides to go to sleep. But I do try to grow it as a houseplant. I think I don't have the ideal situation. I have cold, sort of mudroom, bright, light, cold, but they're cold. They're not a happy place for that. And then I have places that are lower light and maybe a little warmer, but dry, you know what I mean? Like a typical house. I mean, a lot of people have that situation.
Yeah, none of us have the perfect situation, do we, for overwintering plants. And I, for the longest time, I was in a much smaller house, much smaller garden than I have now. And I had to put these in, a lot of these in the corner of my dirt basement, past all of the mess and the crumbling walls and the, you know, there's never an ideal space. And I really didn't have a lot of indoor space to give to anything other than a plant that was looking really good. I didn't have a lot of places to put the pity puppies, you know, the ones that the high maintenance partners.
Pity puppy is not a chapter in the book, but I love that. But you call them the high maintenance partners.
Yes, those are the plants that they really challenge us to learn a little bit more about perhaps a specific genus or just something that we maybe have a sentimental attachment to, but is tough to get through the winter. And I look at those as, I really do look at those as a challenge, but I try not to take on too many of them at one time. Because you just don't want to have windowsills completely overflowing, or at least you do it first and then you don't.
That's interesting that you say that because, you know, I've been gardening a long time and I started with houseplants probably 40 something years ago. And I've noticed in the last few years, I've gotten tired of looking at the sort of sorry, you know, certain types of houseplants, even just some of the fancy leaf begonias don't love it by the end of the winter, you know, and some are fine and sturdier and some don't. And you do get tired after a while of nursing along everybody, and some gardeners don't, but I didn't. I thought to myself, you know what? I want more of these sort of sturdy types that look better, or the ones that just go to sleep, like my rock hard cannas in the basement. I wanted to ask you about, you know, that those aren't the only things that we could do that with, the cannas, the dahlias, the gingers. Like even a big Brugmansia, or what other ones? Plumeria, maybe? What other things?
Yes, Plumeria. I have a beautiful Plumeria on the deck right now. I was just looking at it this morning that overwintered stick-like in my basement, no light, just above freezing, and it's happy as a clam, looking beautiful right now. That's it's a tree. And this is a very small one, but it can be cut back easily. Brugmansia is another one, Angel's Trumpets. You can't believe that it's going to come back, but it really does. It's amazing. One of the ones that was a surprise to me, but sort of validates my idea of keep experimenting, is Cissus discolor, the Rex begonia vine.
Yes.
And I love that plant, and I can't always find it easily other than mail order. And so I thought, well, I had it in a pot one year and it was growing up through my autumn fern and looking beautiful. And I thought, I'm just going to take the pot and throw it in the garage. What do I have to lose? And the next season it came back. It took a little bit of time, sort of like a ginger, but it came back. And by July, end of July, it was absolutely beautiful. So there you go. That experimentation with, well, why not? Why not take a chance? What do you have to lose?
Yeah. So you just mentioned, and I guess, by the way, bananas would be another one, right? The Abyssinian bananas are another one we could like even cut back a little bit and lie in the basement floor asleep, couldn't we?
Yes. Now, there are a couple caveats with that. So the bananas start out as best friends because they are super simple to overwinter. I always, I don't lie them down, however, they always stay upright because even it, with the small amount of light that a garage usually has, you know, lights going on and off, they will gravitate, their growing point will start to move towards, you know, just gravity, it'll start to move up. And you'll end up with a deformed plant really easily. So I keep those vertical, or at least towards vertical. But as they get bigger and you're bringing them in and out, and I've got some that are 5, 6 years old now, they get heavier. And one of these large Enseti ventricosum, the big red Abyssinian banana, that can weigh probably 100 pounds. I told my husband that banana over there is going to die if it's left in the garden. I can't bring it in. Well, my husband loves bananas. He adores that tropical look. And so I knew that he would go and he'd go and get it for me if I did that. So I sort of used manipulation basically to get that banana in the garage this year. But I think that might be the last year for it because it's just gotten too big for me.
So, and that's what happened with my oldest Brugmansia a number of years ago. I had it and it was better and better and better and amazing every year. And then finally it was just, there was just too much to it. You know, it kind of was unwieldy. It wasn't that it was 100 pounds. It was just that it was unwieldy to really give a good winter home to. So, I wanted to ask you, so we've talked about some plant ideas and you mentioned with the Cissus Color the Rex begonia vine. I think you mentioned a combination, which conjured an image for me that you have it out in the garden somewhere. So tell us a little bit, like in the last few minutes or so, tell us a little bit about like your, I mean, you're using these not just on your patio or deck in a pot, but you're incorporating these plants. And where have you taken inspiration from in doing that?
Oh, some of the great botanical gardens out there. Chanticleer is one of them that's close to me and within a couple hours. Use tropical plants in incredible ways, and that's incredibly inspiring. But I'm seeing more and more tropical accents in temperate gardens of good designers, and they add energy, and that's really inspired me to add that energy to my summer garden, and to do so in a way that accents and doesn't overwhelm. That's really my philosophy with these plants. I have no desire to create a tropical garden. You can do that if you wish. But I want to create a temperate garden that is energized by these bursts of interesting foliage, contrasting colors, textures, and unusual that surprises people when they come around the corner. Whether they're gardeners or not gardeners, I have so many non-gardeners come to my garden, and the first thing they say is that a banana? Like, it doesn't even occur to them how could you have a banana here in the mid-Atlantic? So, and that just makes me giggle. It makes me happy that they're suddenly they're part of the garden. They're experiencing the garden in a way that they understand. This is just a fun energy to cultivate in your garden. And it brings us through some of the hottest periods in the summer. This is a time where, you know, we have a lot of temperate plants that can handle this kind of the heat that we're getting and the humidity. But those pops, those accents just keep you sailing through as some of the temperates come into peak and out of peak. That's what I really love about tropical and subtropical plants and how to use them effectively.
Yes. And you've inspired us to adopt some new best friends. If one can adopt new best friends. I want to remind people we're going to have a book giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. Is there one more plant you just want to shout out for those of us who are going to go shopping this week now out in the garden centers? Any others?
Yes, absolutely. Tuberous begonias. I think a lot of people think of those as annuals, but they're just sumptuous. They're very feminine, gorgeous plants. Incredible color throughout the season. The Iconia series is so beautiful. And then at the end of the season, you don't have to throw those away. You collect that tuber and you treat it as you would a dahlia. So if you're seeing that color and they are everywhere right now, grab one, enjoy it, throw it in with a caladium.
Thank you so much, Marianne Wilburn. And I've been enjoying the book Tropical Plants and How to Love Them. Thank you. And I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Margaret. Yes, it was a pleasure.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant color blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening and plant shopping meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.